This is Baby Talk Podcast with Penny Johnston.
All right, this week we're launching on a sealed section topic on Baby Talk. We're going to be talking about body parts and childbirth. There will be mention of bowels, bladders and vaginas, and I'm sorry if this is going to make you feel uncomfortable. I do want to provide you with the opportunity for an exit if you're listening with children or delicately minded men. But nothing we say in this story is going to make you feel as uncomfortable as a woman with pelvic organ prolapse. Yes, prolapse is a debilitating injury, most likely caused by childbirth. And in case you're thanking your lucky stars that you dodged that bullet from your childbirth, it can still be waiting for you, storing all the horrible side effects for when menopause kicks in. In case you're wondering, pelvic organ prolapse affects one in four women. Oh joy, more that you weren't expecting from childbirth. Thank goodness for my next guest. Professor Carolyn Gargett is a National Health and Medical Research Council Research Fellow. She's also head of the Endometrial Stem Cell Biology Group and working on new ways of treating pelvic organ prolapse. And it's possible, just possible, that the newest treatments will take place in the weeks after you delivered your baby, whether you're suffering from prolapse symptoms or not. So, Professor Gargett, we need you to explain exactly what is meant by prolapse, because it's not something that you read about in the nice books about pregnancy.
Not only is it not mentioned in the nice glossy brochure, it's also a taboo topic. And so many people don't even know what it is, and even women for that reason. So what pelvic organ prolapse is, or POP, we often call it just POP, what it is really the descent or the herniation, it's a hernia, of the pelvic organs into the vagina. So it can be the bladder, the bowel and the uterus itself, and it can be any combination of those organs. And so this causes a great deal of discomfort. It interferes with the bladder and bowel function and sexual function, and it can also be associated with incontinence, urinary and bowel incontinence as well. So they're really yucky things that most people don't want to talk about too much.
Well, this is the benefit of this being a podcast is that you can kind of listen to this on your own. So the vagina is basically the passage that you use for intercourse and the bit that the baby comes out.
So it's
a lot of muscles involved in squeezing.
How does
stuff intrude into there?
Well, what happens is during childbirth, that's a very narrow passage for that big head to get through, and just the whole process causes damage to the support structures. There are three support structures. There's some ligaments, there's the vaginal walls themselves, and then there's the pelvic floor muscles that most people have heard about and will be in the glossy brochure. And they can get torn, they can get overstretched, and most of the damage is done with the first child. And then after that, the subsequent pregnancies and deliveries can add to it. And then as women age, there's an ageing process, and it often manifests around menopause. Those women who have quite a serious injury, like some of the pelvic floor muscles tearing off, they will have symptoms not that long after childbirth, you know, in the couple of years subsequent. And they're the ones who probably have got a much longer period of problems with the prolapse. Whereas those that get to menopause, that's sort of when it really starts to show up, all those discomforting things. But, you know, a menopausal woman, a 50 to 60-year-old woman, still got quite a lot of years left ahead of her, and the symptoms are really quite distressing.
So you might think that you've dodged a bullet with your delivery, but this is something that could creep up on you later in life.
That's right, because it gradually develops over time. You know, the uterus starts to slowly fall down.
I don't like the sound of that.
No. And you may not want to put this in, but one of the ways you can know is that if you use tampons to, you know, manage menstruation or your period, that sometimes they don't work because they actually go up the side of the uterus because the uterus is coming down, for example, and no one tells you that information.
No, that's so it's childbirth does this.
Yes, it's not only childbirth, but it's the biggest risk factor. Pregnancy also contributes, and obesity, certain other disorders that related to kind of the connective tissues, collagen disorders and things like that. But it's predominantly vaginal birth. One thing that people could think is, oh, well, I'll just have a cesarean, that will stop me getting a prolapse. And in one way, it minimises the risk, but you need for 10 women to have a cesarean to save one woman from having prolapse and serious prolapse. So it's not the best, and there's a lot of risks with cesarean as well, even though it's such a common operation. But it is better for baby if there's no other medical emergency to be born vaginally for a whole variety of reasons. Mm. So that's just one thing, because sometimes women think, oh, well, if I just have a cesarean. Nowadays, because of the ultrasound and eventually maybe our pressure sensor device, but with the ultrasound available with specialists who use it, they can detect women who a cesarean is probably a good idea. So women who are uncertain or feeling worried, that's the sort of thing that they could go to their gynecologist and ask, you know, could I have a proper ultrasound to determine should I have a cesarean or not to prevent prolapse? There's other reasons for having a cesarean, and, you know, the gynecologists and the obstetricians, or the obstetricians in particular, will determine those. So there's definitely a place for cesarean for certain conditions.
This obviously has been going on for as long as women have been delivering babies.
That's right.
I imagine over the years there's been a few, I'm going to use inverted commas, creative solutions put forward to this.
Mm. Well, yes, there's currently like the pelvic floor muscle exercises. Women who've been through childbirth always get to do those. But, you know, if you've damaged the tissue too badly or torn a muscle, they can't really help then. They also insert something called a pessary, which kind of just pushes the uterus up a bit or pushes, because you get these big bulges as though the bowel or the bladder pushes into the vagina. In fact, they can come out. Yes, it's quite gross.
So if the uterus is causing the problem, hysterectomy would have been your traditional...
That's right, and it was a very common operation for prolapse, and because surgery is really, I guess, the main treatment for those who've got quite bad prolapse. And I can tell you that 1 in 5 women will have surgery for prolapse.
Okay, so we really need to be paying a bit more attention to this.
That's right.
And I can only imagine that if we're talking about your bowel or your bladder, that's an everyday thing, and we're talking a lot of pain with this?
It can be painful, but I think more it's the difficulty in, say, passing a bowel motion, or because it all goes into that prolapse and it can't come out, and so then the straining makes it worse. And same with the bladder, you don't fully empty your bladder because there's this pocket of it pushed into the vagina, and then that can develop urinary tract infections, and so then women can have a lot of those. Yes, it's quite just uncomfortable, and then same with sexual function, it just isn't quite the same.
No.
As well. So they're kind of the really, and then this feeling of a bulge and a dragging feeling, and often a bit of back pain because everything is sort of, as it were, falling out.
You're not exactly selling
this. And you can see why women don't talk about it that much. And even when I've given talks, you know, like to Probus Club or Rotary Club or something like that, some women don't really want to know too much about it. And I think it's because it's embarrassing and it's just not been a topic for conversation. But today's young women are speaking up a bit more, and I certainly get a lot of emails from young women who have been told, well, don't hold your baby too much, you know, because you've got a prolapse. And I think, you know, that's a very distressing thing to be told.
Absolutely. Mm. Well, I'm glad that this generation of women is not putting up with what's gone before.
I think so.
A lot of us might have heard in the news, because the latest way, or the most modern way of treating prolapse, is something called mesh treatment. Yes. And that has not necessarily gone all that well either.
No. And I'll just perhaps give you a bit of history there. It's that with 1 in 5 women coming for surgery, and then about a third of those women, their surgery would fail and they would come back from multiple surgeries. So you can imagine this is a big crisis for a hidden disorder that no one wanted to talk about. So out of desperation and the big clinical need, and started to use hernia mesh in the vagina, and then they started to put it in transvaginally, so they'd do an incision and insert the mesh that way. And look, it works for really the majority of women. But where it goes wrong, it has been really terrible for some women. And so that's been the problem, and that's what's been raised, is that the adverse effects, like it can get exposed or it can erode into the bladder or the bowel, and then it has to be reoperated to remove that. And so it was introduced far too rapidly, and there were no clinical trials, but there was no regulation asking for clinical trials either. And the mesh of, over the years, it's been probably about 10 to 15 years they've been used, their design improved a lot as a result of the experiences and some of the studies that were done. And they're much better now, but all the same, they were still causing problems. And the thing is, they were not purpose designed, you know, for the vagina itself, which is quite different to the abdominal wall.
Not having clinical trials, I guess, was in a hurry to provide something that would work. And there were clinical trials in the stomach lining to prevent hernias.
Probably, I presume so, many years ago. That I can't really tell you. And now, well, the TGA has banned all polypropylene mesh. And people like us are researching to try and improve the kind of materials we've made. Some material that is non-degradable, like polypropylene, but we've made it match the mechanical properties of the vagina. And we're also now moving towards not a permanent mesh, but something that will degrade over time. And these are called really nano biomaterials. They're very, very small at the what we call the nano scale, and they can interact with cells much better. And they slowly degrade. We do think that support is needed for about up to 2 years to promote new tissue growth through the use of our stem cell population. And these materials then also provide that support, and also a structure for the cells that we want to give and the tissue itself to interact with. So more of a, what we call it, a biomimetic material. So it's like tissue and will behave more like tissue and will integrate much better into the tissue and should give a much better outcome.
And I understand that some of your research with endometriosis is taking a look at the stem cells that women produce naturally. Is that even potentially going to provide you a new way of perhaps regenerating some of that lost muscle tone?
Well, what we're doing actually is we're using there's two stem cell types in endometrium, which is the lining of the uterus, in the womb lining. And one of them is called a mesenchymal stem cell, and that's the one that we're actually using for treating pelvic organ prolapse. So we want to, we've been trialling in animal studies, put that together with our different biomaterials and our nanomaterial, and we've tested that so far in mice. And we're about to start in sheep. And in the sheep, we do a vaginal surgery, because the sheep vagina is a very similar size and structure to the human. And so, and the sheep also get a prolapse-like problem as well. And we have a way of identifying those sheep, because with collaborators at Flinders University, we've got a special probe that uses fibre optic technology, and we're able to look at the weaknesses of the vaginal wall all along its length to determine where it's weak or not, and looked at that in sheep as our kind of animal model. And then we're looking at it, sort of, we've just started like a little clinical trial in women as well to see whether it works in women. We've modified it so that it's a much user-friendly type device for, it's really a diagnostic and a monitoring device. So it's another innovation that we've been working on with our collaborators.
As a feminist issue, has it taken to the point where a woman like yourself is in this very high position in research that lets it become a priority?
That's right. I was horrified at the incidents. Like, I saw the gory pictures of the surgery and the problems, and I thought, this is just not good enough. I'm going to do something about it. I'm going to use our cells. I'm going to design new material, and we're going to use it for prolapse. So that's how it happened.
At the moment, because you're still in the research phase, I mean, what are women doing now that need this urgent surgery?
Well,
and do you have some advice?
Well, they certainly should try their pelvic floor exercises and go to a physiotherapist who's a specialist in that type of thing, because for some women that will work. But for those women where it's not helping that much, really, I tell you what, there's the two things that we know from our other colleagues, especially over New Zealand, who've developed other sort of devices. We know that the two worst things that raise what we call the intra-abdominal pressure, so, and then that pushes down on the uterus and on the vagina, are constipation or straining to do bowel motions, and the other one is coughing. So women have to make sure that their bowel motions are okay and not allow themselves to get constipated. And the second thing is that if they have asthma or any other kind of illness that causes them to cough a lot, they really need to get treatment to minimise coughing, because those two were the worst. That's probably unpublished data, actually.
Yes.
But heavy lifting is not good either, but it's not as bad as coughing and straining.
And is there a benefit for women who know that they had a difficult birth and, you know that there was some damage? Is there a benefit in them finding a really red-hot gynecologist to keep an eye on things they go through?
Yes, they should. And there's a special gynecologist who deal with urogynecological disorders like prolapse. So a urogynecologist in particular, and, you know, we have some very good ones in Australia.
At the moment, if women are at the surgical stage, is the mesh still being used? Because yours hasn't been developed yet.
No, that in Australia, they no longer can use that mesh. There are some countries in Europe that have not banned it at all and are using it in the appropriate way. I mean, they've learnt a lot, but I still think much better meshes will be coming, and women are trying to hold off on surgery for as long as they can. You know how I explained to you that it develops over time? Well, we kind of figured, why should we wait for it to develop? Why not do something when the injury occurs? And so the injury occurs during childbirth, and we figured that we could probably isolate the same cells out of the placenta, from the mother's part of the placenta. They're derived from the uterine lining. And we're looking to ways of injecting those cells, perhaps into the damaged tissue. Maybe when they have their 6-week checkup, for example, they could have their own cells derived from their placenta. That's another thing. We're about to embark on those studies. So we think. And there's also ways, better ways, using ultrasound and then our pressure sensor device that could diagnose too that women who might be at risk in particular, and to have this kind of preventative measure. So that's really our big focus as well. And we think that that probably holds a lot of promise. We have to test it in animals first. So we're actually, and we'll do it in sheep. And so if it looks promising in sheep, then be ready to start the clinical trials. We have a little bit more work to do with our mesenchymal stem cell population so that they meet Therapeutic Goods Administration, TGA, regulations for giving cells back to women. But our goal is that the women get their own cells. We think that's a much simpler for them, have their own cells, and that we don't have to worry about any kind of rejection and things like that.
Oh, forget the Kardashians eating their placentas.
You're going to
want to keep yours in the fridge for stem cells.
Yes, well, you could. And
it sounds so much better than surgery, really. So
yes, that's okay. What we think. Yes,
get on with that research.
Yes,
then. I want to
that's
see
right.
some results.
And that's right.
And soon,
funding is the big issue, really. But we have a big grant into the National Health and Medical Research Council, so we're hoping on that.
Professor Carolyn Gargett, National Health and Medical Research Council Research Fellow. She's also head of the Endometrial Stem Cell Biology Group, and she's a deputy director of the Hudson Group, researching pelvic organ prolapse in Victoria. If you've just found us, you can find Baby Talk on iTunes and the ABC app. Also, there'll be more information on the Baby Talk website, which can be found pretty easily by just typing Baby Talk, one word, into your search engine. There you'll find a great archive of our stories about pregnancy, childbirth, fertility, toddlers, and babies.
You're listening to Penny on Baby Talk.
Find Baby Talk wherever you get your podcasts.
Of course, you can find us on Facebook too, which is a great way of keeping up to date with the topics that we're talking about and posting about. We'd love to see you sometime soon. I'm Penny Johnston, and you're listening to Baby Talk.
ABC Baby Talk is a weekly podcast on ABC Digital Radio, wherever you get your podcasts and on the ABC Listen app. Like us on Facebook to find out as soon as a new episode is ready. Just search for ABC Baby Talk.